Welcome to the Scoop Podcast, where we talk about all things testing, regulatory, and go-to-market for infant formula. I'm your host, Karen Breiderman, and today with me I have Justin Heller to talk all things microbiology testing when it comes to infant formula. Let's get started. Today on the show, we're excited to have Justin Heller, lead technical scientist with Eurofins SFA Microbiology in Horsham, Pennsylvania, to talk to us about microbiology testing in infant formula, Coronabacter testing specifically, and what to look for in a microbiology lab that specializes in infant formula testing. So thanks so much for being with us today, Justin.
I'm happy to be here.
Yeah, thanks so much. So as a really overarching basic question, what is microbiology in general and specifically when it comes to food manufacturers?
So microbiology in the basic form is the study of microorganisms. That's including bacteria, yeast, and molds. So some bacteria, yeast, and molds are good. Some make medicine. Some are probiotics. Some we find naturally in our bodies. But then there's also bad ones that can turn into opportunistic pathogens or cause diseases. And then in some cases, it can even turn fatal. So there's a lot of influence that microbiology has on the world around us. So even from at home when you have spoiled chicken or rotten bananas, or from a manufacturer standpoint, they have to always worry about the microbiology that goes into their products, and they're worried about contamination and adulteration of their products. And then this brings us to infant formula. Infant formula is close to sterile, and so any little bit of bacteria that gets in there, or mold or yeast, can be devastating. And so that is why microbiology is really important. That's what we're here to talk about today, right?
Absolutely, it is. Okay. So in the last 12 to 18 months, microbiology actually has been a very hot topic in infant formula, specifically Coronabacter. And so why is that organism singled out, in your opinion?
So Coronabacter, typically, to a normal healthy adult, is not really pathogenic. Our immune system is developed enough for the most part of the human population. However, when we're dealing with the main consumer of infant formula, infants, they don't have a built-up immune system yet. And so Coronabacter can actually become pathogenic within them and can lead to devastating health conditions, which can lead to fatality.
Yeah. And so what is the pathogenicity of Coronabacter? How does it present in an infant?
So Coronabacter is ingested and eventually gets into the bloodstream, which actually finds its way to the meninges of our nervous system. And so that will lead to the inflammation of the meninges, which can then lead to just devastating effects on the body.
Yeah, terrible. So how does Coronabacter get into an infant formula? What are the ways it would be introduced?
So Coronabacter in nature, it's found commonly within the soils. And so whenever you have something that's as common in the soils, that can be tracked to many different places along the entire production line, raw ingredient line, from your workers that are dragging it in to the cardboard boxes that are being delivered. So there's so many different avenues for Coronabacter. And so that's why it's so scary for infant formula manufacturers, because it can be introduced in so many different ways. And it's not necessarily it's not a super hardy organism, but it can persist in very dry, arid environments pretty easily.
So if it's such a ubiquitous organism, why don't we see this a problem? Why don't we see this as a problem in other food products?
So other food products, they're more directed towards the general population that have a developed immune system.
Right.
So necessarily Coronabacter isn't a big deal in those other food products or other consumables. If there were certain consumables advertised or typically are for people with immunocompromised systems, or if it is for special populations such as infants, then it becomes a very critical point in that observation for that product. So, but necessarily Coronabacter on chicken, we're not too worried about that. Additionally, some of these products have cooking steps, heat steps to also mitigate that risk of consumption of other pathogens that possibly would be dangerous.
Yeah, it makes a lot of sense. So this is obviously a very important test for us to get right, for manufacturers and for consumers to have trust in the product. So what's different about what you guys are doing at Eurofins SFA Micro that is different to perhaps other microbiology labs that are offering testing on infant formula?
So glad you asked that. We actually have been developing this laboratory for this specificity of infant formula, specifically to give that dedicated infant formula microbiology laboratory with dedicated test methods that were catered towards the infant formula matrix to provide the highest quality for our infant formula clients. Yeah. So infant formula is treated pretty near close to a sterile product compared to other food categories that you would find in typical microbiology testing laboratories like raw beef, chicken rinse carcasses, produce, raw produce, vegetables, ready-to-eat foods, all sorts of different ones that have naturally have some sort of bacterial contamination. That's okay. And so, but necessarily when you're testing it alongside something that's very close to sterile, it can lead to questions and concerns from the client end of things, like, oh, what if there was cross-contamination? And, oh, what if it's not specific enough for infant formula? Right. How precise are your test methods? How low can you get for your detection limits? And so that is what we strived for. We wanted to really focus in on how can we have the most precise and accurate test methods for infant formula specific.
Yeah.
And this will eventually lead to a much greater hold on what we can expect within the infant formula matrix as well.
Yeah, fantastic. So you don't let any other food products come into your lab?
Not at all.
That's fantastic. Awesome. So you spoke about the different test methods. What are the test methods, let's say specifically for Coronabacter, what are the different ways we can test for it?
So for Coronabacter, there is the traditional culture methods, which typically have a primary enrichment, which is kind of like a non-selective enrichment. Then we will have a selective enrichment after that. And so that will force the growth of Coronabacter specific species. So then we can get that to a level where we can then streak that onto a selective auger, where we can then take it further to isolate out and determine if we do have Coronabacter or not.
Right. And is that the typical way that we would do it, or is there a more rapid option?
So there has been, of course, within the past two decades, PCR technology has been very common within the microbiology food testing. And so we also introduce a PCR testing where we are looking for that genetic fingerprint that makes up the Coronabacter family. And so if there is anything from the Coronabacter family that has that fingerprint, this PCR technology will allow the detection of these and no other organisms.
Yeah.
And so that in combination with the cultural method is a strong duo and typically is the proper way to go about these methods, especially for pathogen detection.
Yeah. And so other pathogens would be like Salmonella, Listeria.
Yeah. So other pathogen detection methods is that we offer are Salmonella, Listeria, and then we have several enumerations where we can determine, you know, how clean is the product or if there is any of these other organisms, how much is there of it?
So you were talking about other enumeration methods. So what are the other tests that manufacturers should be looking for when they're testing an infant formula?
So, I mean, generally you want to know if your product is of relative cleanliness.
Sure.
So we have the generic bacteria counts, generic yeast and mold counts. Then we can get into E. coli and coliforms. We also do enterobacteria. And then additionally, for the more specific microorganisms, we can get into Bacillus cereus. We can do Staph aureus, as well as mesophilic spore formers and thermophilic spore formers.
Fantastic. So that's quite a long list of microorganisms to look out for. So what is the best ways, in your opinion, or what are some of the ways that they can mitigate having these counts show up in their product?
So, of course, the biggest contaminant is the outside world.
Yeah.
So facilities want to take precautions and mitigate their risks from bringing the outside world into their world or their manufacturing facility. And so there's numerous ways that you can go about this, from wearing scrubs every single day. New scrubs are put on employees, hand washing stations, gowning stations, filtration of air, even down to the water supplies. You can always filter out those. The amount of possibilities are endless to really do it. You just have to figure out which ones are going to be the most effective for my specific manufacturing facility.
Yeah. So you're talking about the environment and trying to keep that sterile or close to sterile, right? And keeping the outside world out from your inside manufacturing world. So how do manufacturers monitor that? What is the way that they make sure that their environment is clean?
So that's going to get into your environmental monitoring program. Mm-hmm. And so this is another thing that you can easily get lost into. Yep. So normally you will separate out specific zones that are high risk and low risk, and you want to create a program to monitor those guys. Mm-hmm. So this can utilize different methods such as swabbing, sponges, ambient air plates, or forced air plates, and a variety of other tests such as waters as well. And this can give you an idea of, do we have any hot spots
right.
within our manufacturing facility that have these organisms? Are we trying to detect any specific organisms from these environmental methods, or are we just going for the general count? Would it be beneficial to do these pathogens yep. as well? And so you can create this huge map of, do you have hotspots in zone 1 or zone 2? Is zone 1 leaking into zone 2 and 3? Do we see traces of these pathogens later down the line as well? Yeah. And so you can, typically this is a very time-exhaustive process, and so you typically need somebody that is hands-on with that all the time
yeah.
because it is the most important step to understand that, are my sanitation practices working?
Yeah.
So, you know, from a pre-sample to a post-sample after cleaning, do we have that mitigation of bacteria? And so this is extremely important to prevent any potential adulteration of your products later down the line that could necessarily lead to what we all fear is a nationalized recall.
Yeah, absolutely. And do we at Eurofins help with testing swabs?
Yes. So we have several labs that do environmental swabs, and they are fantastic at what they do.
Yeah, absolutely. And so speaking of keeping the environment clean, do we also do an environmental monitoring program within our lab to make sure our lab is clean when we're testing product samples?
So yes.
Great.
So especially in the case of if there is ever any presumptives or confirmed positives, we want to also rule out that potentially was it us that cross-contaminated
absolutely.
It? Absolutely. And so with our own environmental monitoring procedures, we can give more certainty into that either we did or we did not, and then that can lead to a better repertoire of how is the data looking, is there that risk of cross-contamination, and then can we make it for certain that our client is getting the cleanest facility to get yeah. their microbiology testing performed in yeah. as well.
Super important. So we've spoken about contamination at the plant, you know, potential cross-contamination at the plant, potential cross-contamination at the lab. How about at the consumer's home? Do you think there would ever be an opportunity to, you know, introduce some microorganisms into the product at
home?
So
that is one of the harder to control areas because
sure.
that comes down to every consumer.
Yeah.
And so there are many precautions that you can take. Of course, you know, first and foremost is keeping certain products refrigerated that require sure. refrigeration. Additionally, you want to use provided scoops that mm-hmm. are supplied with your infant formula. You want to keep those scoops as clean as possible. Even with your baby's bottle, you want to make sure that's properly sanitized. Yeah. You want to make sure whenever you're handling that, you want to have your hands as sanitized as possible too, even wear gloves.
Yeah.
But really, this is where it's critical for the consumer to also take all these precautions
absolutely.
Because you really don't want to introduce any of that to your newborn.
No, definitely.
And we're all very fearful of that.
Yeah.
But taking those proper precautions, of course, if you're looking for more information on this stuff, the CDC has guidelines, and your product or your infant formula manufacturer also provides descriptions to yep. how to perform or how to make your infant formula. And so following these guidelines and on top of that, just basic cleanliness or actually a little extra step on that cleanliness.
Yeah.
Just because you can never be too safe.
Absolutely. That was super interesting, Justin. I think what you're doing is really important for the supply chain and for our manufacturers. So great job. So that brings us to the end of our podcast episode. Thank you so much for joining. Thank you, Justin, for joining
us.
Thank you, Karen. And if you enjoyed this episode, please go and rate and review us wherever you get your podcasts from. And until next time, I'm Karen Breischman, and thank you so much.
Thank you.